Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Verse Number 2.
Dharmaha,
Dharmaha
Projhita,
Projhita
Kaitavaha,
Kaitavaha
Atra,
Atra
Paramaha,
Paramaha
Niramat Saranam, Satam Vedyam
Vastavam
Atra Vastu
Shivadam
Tapa Traya Unmulanam
Srimat
Bhagavate
Maha
Muni
Krite
Kim
Va
Parai
Ishvaraha
Sadyaha
Hridi
Avarudhyate
Atra
Kritibhihi
Susrushubhihi
Tat
Kshanat.
Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. This second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam continues the same mood as the first verse. That of excited praise. We can see that Vyasadeva, he's excited, he's enlivened by this topic. And we can also become enlivened if we, by reading this, then we want to read more. Some, you may read the following is a report on the economic condition of farmers in the province of such and such in the year such and such. And most people wouldn't be interested in reading much more of that. But those who are interested in understanding the truth, the highest truth, those who are not matsara pravritti, those who are not, or those who wish to be cured from the envious nature, they will inquire into the highest truth. This word is used here, near matsara. Those who are near matsara, they will be they will delight in Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who are envious, they don't see any, what do I need the highest truth for? I am the highest truth. What do I need to inquire into the highest truth for? The highest truth is kick everyone in the head and dominate them. Ishvarahamaham bhogi. Or if we're not able to do that, if we are dominated by others, then make a show of submission to them. All the time cultivating hatred of them, so that when we get in a position to be able to do so, we can crush them. So the politeness and submissiveness of materialistic people is actually just another expression of their envy, that's all. It doesn't mean that they're actually good people, it's just that they're behaving like that because if they're not good, if they don't behave well, then they'll get crushed. That's all. Most citizens are good citizens, we think, until the police go on strike. When the police go on strike, This happened some time ago in America, and then all the shops got looted. And why didn't they get looted normally? Because the police are there to violence. People are afraid. New Orleans, the city got flooded, the whole administration system, including that of the police system, it was all broken down, and people are looting. Of course, you think they might loot for food, but they looted for everything else too. So people who are sincere, they will appreciate this Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva is introducing. Here is this knowledge, the highest knowledge. If you're envious, don't come here. It's not for you. Persons who are interested in reality distinguished from illusion, persons who understand that I am in illusion, therefore I need to have reality delineated for me. Such persons require this Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's not just a means to acquire knowledge of reality. It's not simply a means to an end, but Bhagavatam is the end in itself. Bhagavatam is Krishna. Therefore, we'll find in the next verse the recommendation to go on reading Bhagavatam. It's not that you will read Bhagavatam and we'll get what knowledge we want from it, we'll cram it all in and then finish. Then I don't need it anymore. But Bhagavatam is Krishna and is eternally worshipable by the Bhagavatas, the devotees of Krishna. Generally we read a book and we think, now I know that, I'm a master of this knowledge. Now I got it, it's my property. But Bhagavatam is always worshipable. You cannot say, I have mastered the Bhagavatam, because if we actually study Bhagavatam, then we'll learn we're not the masters. And we'll find that whatever, if we think we know Bhagavatam, I read the Bhagavatam. Who's read the Bhagavatam through more than once? So, first time you read it, you found it very exciting, didn't you? What about the second time? What was your experience? More exciting, and specifically I found that I felt I hadn't read it at all. There's so many things here. And it happened the third time, and the fourth time. And it happens every time. There's so much here. Oh, you read a line and you know, well, I've read so many times, I must have read this, but you feel like that's amazing. You read it so many times, suddenly, ding, the light goes. And then you read it another time and you find there's something else. Because Bhagavatam is describing Krishna, who is unlimited. And the realization of Krishna is unlimited. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Krishna Tula Bhagavat Bibhu Sarva Shroy Prati Shloke Prati Akare Nana Artha Koi, that the Srimad Bhagavatam is comparable to Krishna. Just as Krishna is powerful, all powerful, and can offer shelter to all, so Bhagavatam also. And in every verse and in every syllable, there are various meanings. Of course, the various meanings, they can be summarized into a few basic principles. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're all His servants. We are meant to serve Him. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has, well, Baladeva Vidyabhushan first of all, and then Bhaktivinoda Thakur following Baladeva Vidyabhushan summarized these topics Dashamu, the tonic. Dashamu means the 10 roots, or 10 basic principles of Vaishnava philosophy. But within the basic subjects, there are so many angles, so many. We'll even find different Vaishnava acharyas giving almost completely different explanations of different verses, just like in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a well-known verse: "Indriyani parani ahur indriyebhya parang manaha manasastu parabuddhe yo buddhe paratastu saha." What's the meaning of this verse? Sorry? Yeah, you got it, but I didn't hear it. Yeah. Highest is the soul. It's a gradation. There are the senses. They say, Indriyani Parani Ahur, Indriya, above the senses is the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. Which word is the word for the soul in this verse? Saha. It's the object of the verse, which means he or it, this subject. So it's understood as the soul. And Srila Prabhupada, following Baladeva Vidyabhusha, said the soul is superior to all of these. The soul is superior to the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. But Ramanuja in his commentary takes saha to mean lust, because that's the subject under discussion. That lust is higher. Lust is more powerful than the mind, the senses, and the intelligence. So both are, according to the Sanskrit usage and the context, valid explanations. So what's right? Is Ramanuja wrong and Baladev Vidyabhushan right? Or? We'll have to ask Krishna. How are you going to ask Krishna? You have to go through the acharyas. And the acharyas, do they disagree? No, but both are acceptable understandings. So when Krishna speaks, or when Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of Krishna, speaks, then many, many meanings may come out, but those meanings have to be, which meanings, that has to be understood through the Vaishnava acharyas. Otherwise, to screw out some Mayavad impersonal meaning, you can also take that kind of meaning. Krishna gives intelligence to the Mayavadis. How in the one book which Vyasadeva gave to explicate the Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu, this Vastu, this subject is the actual subject of the Vedas. And what is the subject? Krishna's two Bhagavan Swam. And somehow Krishna gives them intelligence how to relegate Krishna, or not find Krishna, or think, well, Krishna's there, but he's not very important. They do that with all the Vedas, and it should be impossible with the Srimad Bhagavatam, but Krishna gives them such intelligence that Vyasadeva is shouting, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they listen, what did he say? He said that everything's impersonal. How do they do that? It's called Matsara Pravritti, envious mentality. So Vyasadeva is saying from the beginning, you guys, this isn't for you. You get out of here. There's no place for you. Don't, as Srila Prabhupada said, don't poke your nose in here. The Mayavadis shouldn't poke their noses into the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not their subject matter. It's not for you. You go and read the Upanishad. That's not meant for you either. Actually, none of the... What's meant for you, what's meant for you is the garbage heap. That is for the Mayavadis. That's stated by Narada Muni. That the garbage heap is meant for those who are not interested in Srimad Bhagavatam. So people, they're coming out of the garbage heap and saying, and they see the Srimad Bhagavatam, all they know is garbage, and they think the Srimad Bhagavatam is garbage also. And it must be garbage, because, you know, everything's garbage. The truth, what is the highest truth? Garbage. So, Srimad Bhagavatam must be garbage. It's the highest truth, it must be garbage. So, Vyasadeva is presenting for those who are sincere the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Supreme Lord is very kind that He specifically speaks, all these shastras are specifically meant for those who are sincere, which means the devotees. But He's also very kind to the non-devotees by telling them straightforwardly that they're all rascals and they're going to hell. So that they can wake up. He tells them. So many times, we find in Bhagavad Gita that Lord Krishna refers to the murhas, dushkriti, naradhama, just to give them some idea. One who thinks like that is a demon. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. That's me. I am a demon, according to Bhagavad Gita. It gives them some chance to reform. Up to them. And the acharyas come and very kindly, Srila Prabhupada very kindly yelled at the demons. One man stood up after a lecture and said, "I am God." And Prabhupada said, "You are not God, you are dog." He said, "Well, that's not very polite." It's not polite, but that is mercy. And everyone clapped, and God had to sit down. The God dog, or whatever you want to call him. On another occasion, someone did the same thing, stood up and said, "I'm God." And Prabhupada reacted differently. He said, "I offer you my respects, now sit down." So this is the kindness of Vyasadeva and Krishna and Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas, that they're very kindly to the envious. They let them know. They reveal the nastiness, the wrongness, the enviousness of their position. So we find Srila Prabhupada also in his translation. I don't know how it comes out in your translation, but at least in English we find that Srila Prabhupada, he's also very excited, he's relishing this. Otherwise he couldn't write like this. If you're given a job, someone's given some clerk in the administrative department of the government is given a job to write a report on the economic condition of farmers in such and such an area. You know, it's a boring job, and he's doing it as a job, and you can't expect it to be very exciting, or you can't expect when he goes home at night, he's telling his wife that, "Oh, I'm writing a report on the economic condition of farmers." And it's just boring. Unless you're a farmer. But he's not a farmer. He's a writer. So Prabhupada, he wrote this Srimad Bhagavatam on the order of his guru, but he wasn't doing it just as a duty, but he was personally very enlivened by this. Took much play, and we see that in Prabhupada's the way he writes, it's so beautiful, expressive, poetic. Even though it's prose, it sounds poetic. Just like this. Here's a Prabhupada aphorism, which appears in the translation. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. It's beautiful. I mean, just even linguistically, expressively, and the highest truth. What is the highest truth? There may be so many different opinions. This could be translated in different ways, but Prabhupada has taken here the words the highest truth. Well, that comes from the previous verse, Satyam Param, which is non-different from Vedyam Vastavam, the actual subject of the Vedas. What is the actual subject of the Vedas? Ved means knowledge. And the actual subject of the Vedas is the highest knowledge, which means the highest truth. And what is that? That is Shivadam. That is, Shivadam means auspiciousness, well-being. So for the well-being of all. So Srila Prabhupada has added here, of all, but it must be of all. It's not just for the well-being of one person or two persons, but for the well-being of all. And what is that? Tapa Trayonmulanam uproots the threefold miseries. Uproots. So the highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion. Now we don't find in the Sanskrit distinguished from illusion, but Srila Prabhupada has added that as explanatory terms. Carrying on from the previous verse, in the previous verse, in describing the Param Satya, the highest truth, there is within that one verse much discussion in a few words, a summary of vast areas of philosophical understanding of how the supreme truth spreads illusion and is not understood because of illusion. So that supreme truth is the subject here. Here Vyasadeva is giving what is the subject of this book? Well, he's already introduced it in the first verse. In the first verse is the Nirdesh, stating of the subject. And that is continued. Yeah, in the first verse I was saying yesterday there are three in the Mangala Charan, the auspicious introduction to any major work, there are three factors, which is the statement of the subject, Nirdesha, Ashivada, this is the order they're given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, offering benediction to the readers, and Namaskar, and offering obeisances to the higher authority. So in the first verse begins with Namaskar, offering obeisances to this Vasudev, then Nirdesha, or ascertainment of who that Vyasadeva is, and this continues in this verse, that describing what is the purpose of this book, and also giving a benediction to the readers. What will you get from reading this book? Here is the subject of this book. It's like, what is the subject of this paper? The economic condition of farmers in such and such an area. What is the subject of this book? The highest truth, actual reality. And what benefit? What will I get? What's in it for me? What interests? What will I get from studying this? That the super, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within the heart. Srimad Bhagavatam is described here as having been compiled by Mahamuni, which means Vyasadeva, and Srila Prabhupada has blended in the translation, although it's not directly in the Sanskrit, and although some absolutely absurd people criticize Srila Prabhupada for that, it's actually part of the tradition to do so. We'll find that in traditional commentaries, when either in Sanskrit or in Bengali or any other language, when explaining when paraphrasing or restating the meaning of the verse, because generally the verses, they're quite packed in. There's a lot of meaning in the verse. So in giving the commentaries, the commentator will unpack that. They'll give the implied meaning. So Prabhupada's doing that. It's a commonly done thing. So Srila Prabhupada has added here within brackets, this is compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity. This "in his maturity" is within brackets, and it's not actually stated here in this verse, but it is a fact, and it is described later in the Bhagavatam, not much later that comes up. Narada's conversation with Vyas comes up in the fourth and fifth chapter of the first canto. So Vyasadeva, he compiled this Srimad Bhagavatam as is described in that fourth and fifth chapter, how he came to compile it, after compiling all the Vedas. Therefore he's known as Ved Vyas. Vyas means who divides. Veda means knowledge, so there's so much knowledge, but Vyasadeva categorized that and made it easier to approach by doing so. He wrote it down in various categories. So he's known as Ved Vyas. Now, what are the subject matters of the Vedas? Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Dharma is often translated as religion. Srila Prabhupada often translates it as religion, as he does in this purport. But elsewhere he qualifies his translating it as religion by saying that actually religion, it's not really a very good translation of the word dharma. But it's in some context passable translation, but it needs to be qualified more. Qualified, you know what I mean? It means it needs to be explained more or given, contextualized like this. It's a different usage of the normal way of saying qualified. So, apart from translating the word dharma into English or any other language which is far away from Sanskrit, but even within the Vedic tradition, there are so many different commentators or philosophers who have offered different definitions of the word dharma. What exactly does it mean? It's a very big topic. And like I say, different writers and philosophers have offered different explanations of the word dharma. What is its meaning? What is its purpose? In The modern Western way of thinking, religion is part of life. But in the Vedic understanding, life is part of dharma. It's not even that dharma is... In the Western understanding, religion is part of life. We could say that dharma is life in the Vedic culture, but rather life is within dharma. It is... You cannot escape it. Because either you follow it or don't follow it. But everything is within dharma. Dharma is that which literally means that which sustains. So dharma is that which sustains the universe. And that's at the cosmic level. Which is... Which means from the very beginning, the understanding is that everything is interrelated with the, what we would call in English, the metaphysical, the spiritual. But there is also the dharma of each individual living being, or not only living being, or even non-living beings, which means the basic characteristic, that without which that object is not that object. For instance, we may see some white granules. And suppose granules is the shape of sugar. We may see some white granules and think, this is sugar. Look at it, it looks like sugar, white sugar. So we put it in the milk and we drink it and we spit it out. Because it's not milk, it's salt. Sorry, it's not sugar, it's salt. So it looks like sugar. It has one of the characteristics of sugar, which is that it dissolves easily in liquids like water and milk. But it is not sweet, it is salty. So the basic characteristic of sugar is that it is sweet. The basic characteristic of salt is that it is salty. The basic characteristic of chili is that it is pungent. So this was the definition that Srila Prabhupada almost always offered, although for simplification, as here he often also called dharma religion, but a more accurate or deep or substantial translation is the essential characteristic of any object or living being. So, the dharma of the jiva is to serve. That Srila Prabhupada brought that out. I mean, I'm sure he's following the previous acharyas in doing so. We received it from Srila Prabhupada. So, that characteristic which cannot be taken, cannot be divided, cannot be separated from the jiva, is to serve. And then he may either serve Krishna directly or indirectly by rejecting the service of Krishna, may serve Maya, but he has to serve. So for the jiva, dharma, for each individual, dharma means his service. Now one may be a brahmana and have brahmana dharma, or kshatriya and have kshatriya dharma, or vaishya, then he has to follow vaishya dharma, or shudra, she has to follow shudra dharma, or woman, and then follow stri dharma. So brahmana, he's, and again within dharma, there, what are the characteristics of a brahmana? Shamo dabha tapah shocham kshanti arjavam eva cha gyanam vigyanam astikyam brahma karma swabhavajam. These are the natural, this is the nature by which a Brahmana performs his work. That is inseparable from a Brahmana's dharma. But then again, dharma can mean, when we say Brahma dharma, that means that, that generally refers to his pravritti, which is often translated as occupation, or sometimes we say his means of livelihood. But actually these terms, they're all coming from the Western way of thought. So these terms, they're all interrelated with Western culture. The Brahmana doesn't have a means of livelihood. Actually, no one has a means of livelihood. They simply perform dharma rakshati rakshitaha. They simply perform their dharma, and they are maintained by dharma. The idea I'm working for a living makes us think that I am the cause of my maintenance. But the dharmic way of thinking is that I simply have to perform my duty, and then the livelihood is automatically there. And we find that in traditional culture. There's no anxiety for how to get food, clothing and shelter. There's no anxiety. It's only in modern society that this anxiety has been produced because they're so far away from dharma. So dharma also means pravritti, which is another difficult word to adequately translate into English, because the whole way of thinking is so, the whole outlook is so different to that of the that which has evolved over the years in the Western world. But it we can say it means inclination or inclination to act in a certain way, similar to nature. Brahma karma swabhavajam. Swabhav means we can be translated as one's nature. He has an angry nature. He has a compassionate nature. So one's nature or one's inclination to work. So the Brahmana's vritti, which is closer to livelihood or how he works, they are in accord with his swabhav or his nature, which is how does he work then? Yajana yajana, what's the next one? Patana, dana pratigraha. He performs sacrifices himself. He performs sacrifices for others. He recites scripture personally as his own sadhana, and he recites to others. He teaches others, and dan pratigraha. He accepts charity from others and gives, if he has excess, he gives it away. That's all. This is how Brahmana conducts his life. For Kshatriya has a different swabhava, a very different attitude to life. That how is that? Tejo vira duti daksham yudhe chapya palayanam Dhanam Ishvara Bhavascha Kshatra Partha Swabhavaja. Kshatra Karma Swabhavaja. So for the Kshatriya is a very different outlook to that of the Brahmana. Brahmana is Vidya Vinaya Sampanna. He is possessed of knowledge and humility. But the Kshatriya, influence, power, determination, expertise, worldly wise, daksha, worldly wise, we can say. He's expert in material activities. Not a coward. doesn't run away in the battle. Charitable. And Ishwar above, he's a leader, he takes charge. So this is the natural inclination of a kshatriya. And accordingly he works. Accordingly he conducts his life. He's trained in that way and conducts his life in the world in that way. He naturally rules over others, gets things organized. When others don't know what to do, he knows what to do. And if there's any aggressor or anyone ill-behaved within the group, he knows how to punish them he knows how to punish them. So it's a very much more active, worldly involved, the mode of passion, Rajagun is prominent here, but that's tempered also. He's also knowledgeable in Shastra, not as learned as the Brahmanas, but he's guided by the Brahmanas. So like this, and then there are Vaishyas who are doing business, banking, cow protection, agriculture. So the Vedic society, there's interaction of all the various varnas. But everything is conducted according to dharma. And within the Vedic literature, we find Vedic literature written by Vyas are promoted dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And mostly people are interested in dharma, artha, kama, and nothing else. Trivarga, these three objects. They're interested in dharma, artha, economic development. This economic development is different from that of the Rothschilds and Rockefellers, and according to dharma. Economic development should be according to dharma. And also sense gratification, that also is to be enjoyed, but only according to dharma. It's very difficult for people to understand in the modern age, not having been raised in such an atmosphere. Even people who are raised in a religious family, which is getting increasingly rare in the modern age. Who was raised here among all of you? Who was raised in what you might call a religious family? Anyone? Hands up. Not many. So there are things to do. You must go to church every Sunday. Right? And you must... there are certain things you must do to be a good Catholic. Eat fish on Fridays. Don't eat meat. When I was a kid, it was like that. All of you too? You're mostly your Croatians and stuff. Only on Good Friday. It's a good day for the animals and a bad day for the fish. Why do they call it Good Friday? Because they all got saved from their sins. Why? I was just saying good. Why good? If Jesus got killed on that day.
In our language, it's actually
Big Friday, I suppose. Maybe in English it's not good, it's God. I don't know the difference. I'm not that interested either. But there are certain rules you follow to be a good Catholic, isn't it? Ave Maria's, saying the rosary. No one even knows what that is. That was part of the Catholic culture. The rosary, ever heard of that? It's like it has 54 beads, half of the 108, with a head bead. And you say, I can't remember what you say, but you say something or other. Ave Maria is the first line. You know about this? Bulgaria is a Catholic country? No, it's an Orthodox country. But you know about it anyway. Hail Mary, full of grace. Now you remember the first, second clause. The Lord is with me. Yes, I can't remember, it's amazing. I said it so many times in my childhood. Can't remember it at all. Didn't go very deep. Fortunately or unfortunately. Anyway, the concept of dharma and that of religion, you don't do this because it's, you do this and you don't do this because it's the rule of the religion. To be a good Catholic, you do this and you don't do this. But the whole understanding of dharma is much deeper and much more complex. It's not just a set of rules to follow, but it's understanding what dharma is, understanding that we're all interlinked, everything within the universe is interlinked by dharma. Often they may not be a very clear, those who are followers of dharma within the Vedic culture, they may not have a very clear idea. They don't have a very clear idea, generally, of who is Bhagawan. It depends. It depends on the particular situation, what's going on there. If there are Vaishnavas, then the Varnashram dharma comes to its properly pointed. Varnashram dharma is supposed to be centered around doing everything for the as an offering to Lord Vishnu, according to the Bhagavad Gita verse, yad karoshi yad ashnasi yad juhoshi dadasi yad tapasyasi. This is karma yoga. This one is a question about karma yoga. To do everything as an offering to Vishnu. All sacrifices, austerities, charity, everything we eat, everything is done. So this is offering everything to Vishnu. But if there's not a clear idea of Vishnu, then everything is done for the sake of dharma. We find this is very prominent in Mahabharata and also in Ramayana. Why? Just like, for instance, when Bharat and all the inhabitants of Ayodhya were trying to bring Ramachandra Bhagavan back to Ayodhya, and whether he should go or not, the whole discussion was based on dharma. Ram said, well, I gave my word to my father, I promised him, I have to follow the promise. And the others were saying, no, well, in this circumstance, even if you break the promise, it doesn't matter, because there's a higher duty to rule the citizens. And so it's going on like this, on the basis of dharma. Yudhishthira Maharaj, before the battle of Kurukshetra, he said that, why are we going into this battle? Because unless I have at least one village to rule over, I cannot execute my dharma. As a Kshatriya, I have to rule. But I can't do it unless I have to rule over something. It may be the whole world, or it may be one village, but I have to rule. Otherwise, I'll be sinful. I can't execute my function. In modern civilization, or what passes as civilization, they have the idea of countries, and then someone becomes the ruler of the country. But the Vedic concept was different. There were kings, and they had some land to rule over. There wasn't national consciousness. The consciousness was that we are all under this king. And the national, one reason, of course nowadays it's analyzed differently by these pro-Hindu propagandists that India was invaded, but there was no national concept of India being invaded by the Muslims. And but the idea was that, well, from the citizen's point of view, our duty is to offer tax, the vaishyas, they have to give to every, the whole society is structured around the king. It doesn't matter who the king is, that's between them. They can fight among themselves. Someone has to be the king. And our duty is to be brahmanas, vaishyas and shudras in relation to the king. And all the sacrifices, they were organized by the king. The brahmanas, they offered sacrifice for the benefit of all society, but the king was the center. They were subjects of the king. They may have said, I'm from this area, I'm from Avanti, I'm from Kashmir or whatever. But their day-to-day life went on that they were the subjects of a king. And so it's very, very different outlook. Anyway, if we get... I better not stay too long on dharma, because this really will go on for a long time, discussion of dharma. And dharma here, the word dharma, which is rejected here, carrying on where Bhagavad Gita finished, savadhaman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja, reject all kinds of religions, surrender to me only. So Bhagavatam begins with the same thing, completely rejecting all kinds of religion. That sounds very strange. Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijami aham paritranaya sadhunam vinashayata dushkritam dharma sangsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Whenever there is a decline of irreligion and a prominence of religion, of irreligion, then I come, and by crushing the rascals and uplifting the godly, I re-establish dharma, Bhagavan says. And at the end he says, give up dharma. So here the same thing is said, rejecting what is this dharma project of Kaitava Atra, completely rejecting all religions which are materially motivated. This word Kaitava puts the Sarvadhaman Parityajya of Bhagavad Gita in context. When Krishna says reject all varieties of religion, it means reject all materially motivated religions and come to this platform, Param Satya, this religion. Param Satya, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Come to this point, this Dharma, Bhakti Dharma, Satya Dharma. So Dharma here includes dharma, artha, kama, and even moksha. Very few are interested in moksha. Trivarga, the Vedas are called Trivarga, because they mostly promote dharma, artha, and kama. Artha and kama follow from dharma. They are the result of practicing dharma is that one will get artha according to what artha he gets. Here artha means money or similar things. Money, possessions, goods, jewels, wealth. Wealth is in the simple word. And taking that, one can enjoy this. Enjoy. But that enjoyment, that should also not be against the principles of dharma. And even in enjoying, one should execute dharma. It's not that you become religious, you get some money, and then you become irreligious and enjoy yourself. But by the karma, by enjoying oneself, one should simultaneously execute dharma. Therefore, dharmavi ruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshava. Lord Krishna says, I am that lust which is not against the principles of religion. While enjoying sex, then at the same time one executes that according to dharma, and while enjoying karma, at the same time he's doing his duty. That is to be done at the time when the woman is the wife. One is to have sex with one's wife only. There is an exception. Under certain circumstances, one can have the wife of the brother. But that's not allowed in Kali Yuga. Devarena Sutotpatim. But always for the sake of Sutotpati, begetting children. So, that is dharmic. In fact, in Shastra, it's described that for a Grihastha not to approach his wife when she is in the fertile season. That is described as sinful, because Grihastha is supposed to have many children. So, this is how one can enjoy. That's also dharmic. Grihastha's dharma. Of course, it's very complex. There are different things said for different people in different circumstances and different levels. As a general statement, that's maybe not for the higher transcendentalists, that statement. Anyway, the whole Vedic Shastra is promoting these things. Dharma Artha Kama, with the idea of bringing people eventually to moksha, but all of these are rejected. Completely rejected. Vyasadeva wrote all these books, and at the end he says, okay, that was all rubbish, now come here. I'll discuss it more tomorrow, Krishna willing. Very, very big topic. Huge topics. There's so much in here. It would take a long time to give a thorough exposition of all these topics. So, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. And tomorrow is the last. I'm not going to. May take a few visits to Lika to get through the second verse also. To give a basic overview. But anyway, maybe tomorrow I'll leave a little time for questions. Maybe questions on the first verse, not the second verse, because now I gave an overview of the first verse. That's what I mean. Otherwise it goes off in all kinds of directions. That's what I mean, exactly. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.